This podcast is brought to you by the Partnership for Responsible Business, encouraging the development of sustainable communities through inspiring and empowering collaborative economic and community development, highlighting the connection between protected public lands and local economies, and by facilitating environmentally and socially responsible business. More information at prbnewmexico.org. Welcome to the Homegrown Economies Podcast, a brand new program from the Las Cruces Green Chamber of Commerce in beautiful southern New Mexico. I'm Carrie Hamblin, the CEO and president of the Las Cruces Green Chamber. Homegrown Economies spotlights the economic impact to communities by local businesses, nonprofits, public lands, tourism, and the outdoor industry. Every 2 weeks, we will either profile locally owned businesses and talk about the creative ways they have adapted to the pandemic, or we will spotlight those businesses and organizations that are connected to our public spaces and lands, the outdoor economy, and tourism. Today on our program, we feature Angel Peña, the executive director of the Nuestra Tierra Conservation Project. The Nuestra Tierra Conservation Project was created in 2017 by a group of Latinx Hispanic conservation advocates whose experience had shown them the need to provide communities of color with sustainable opportunities for community engagement, access, and education around public lands and waters, rather than initiatives that tokenize their voices. The Nuestra Tierra Conservation Project is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that aims to empower, elevate, and amplify the stories of people of color with a focus on the stories of Latinx and Hispanic communities across the southern border. Now, our guest today has extensive experience in the outdoors and more so of recognizing the important role the outdoors has and continues to have for communities of color, particularly those Latinx and Hispanic communities. Now, our guest today, Angel Peña, we're going to talk to him in a minute, but I'm going to give you a little bit of background on him. He was born and raised in El Paso and is a first-generation American and father of three beautiful children. Angel's educational background is in anthropology and archaeology, receiving both his MA and his BA from New Mexico State University. Throughout his career, he's been able to advocate for our nation's historic, prehistoric, and cultural assets, bringing cultural resources to the forefront of conservation. He has served as a cultural resources specialist for New Mexico Wild. He was a WEIS Fellow in 2014 and as the Rio Bravo Director of the Conservation Lands Foundation in 2016. Now, full disclosure, Angel is a dear friend of mine, and we started working together on the designation of the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument in 2013. We also continue to work on protecting our public spaces and amplifying the importance of the Land and Water Conservation Fund. Now, Angel, it is so lovely to see your face. Thank you so much for being here today on Homegrown Economies.
Carrie, thank you for this opportunity. And yes, ma'am, so great to see you. It's been too long, friend.
It has been too long. So, you know, it was just such a lovely memory the other day that the picture of you and I at the Department of Interior popped up on my social media as a reminder. And it reminded me about that day in Washington, D.C. in May of 2014, when you and I both were at the Department of Interior, when President Obama signed the declaration proclaiming Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument.
To a packed house. I remember when he walked over from the White House. He walked from the White House to the Department of the Interior to sign our national monument into law. It was such a, it was such an awesome experience and fun to remember with you. Absolutely.
Oh, I know. That was just, yeah, it was absolutely incredible. So, you know, the thing I don't know is how you became interested in archaeology and anthropology. Was that something that was like really deeply ingrained in your upbringing?
Oh, that's such a great question, Carrie. No, absolutely not. When I went to college, when I started school there at New Mexico State University, I was going to be the best euphonium player in the world. I don't know if you knew this, but I was a band geek when I graduated high school. I was like, euphonium, for those who don't know, a small little tuba, and I was going to play it better than anybody else. First generation Mexican American, my parents were like, no, we're not going to invest in college, so you can go do that. You need a real degree, quote unquote, something with like, I don't know, with the computer and four walls around you, right? So I went back to the drawing board, completed my first degree in archaeology, anthropology. My mom was like, that's not exactly what I meant. So I went back to school, scored another one. And my mom was like, that's still not what I meant, but it's been working out, Miss Carrie, for sure.
Well, yeah. You know, I mean, you are such an outdoors person. You know, you have the hashtag dads of daughters. You know, you take your kids out in any possibility, any opportunity you can. And so did you grow up like going outdoors and going camping and stuff like that?
No, absolutely not. I am late bloomer to being outside. I became a parent really young when I was 18, and I realized like going on a hike with a little sandwich is kind of super affordable and really cheap as a new young parent. I grew up, all my parents were worked outside during the day. And when the one car was home, the other parent took it out. So I really didn't have access to the outdoors until I started growing up and began to raise a family here in Southern New Mexico. That's when I realized the opportunity of just like, man, what we can drive to in just a couple of minutes in either direction. We can be alone and creating some amazing first time memories with our kiddos, with their family, with our friends. So that's how I got into it.
Yeah. That's really, really interesting, Angel, because, you know, I mean, I had a different experience, and this could probably be where we're talking about when we talk about Nuestro Tierra, is that, you know, I mean, I remember my mom taking me camping up to the Gila. And I think this is really the conversation that we're going to have as we get into the nitty gritty about why we're talking today is about Nuestra Tierra and access to public lands for people of color in comparison to white folks like me.
Yeah.
You know, I do think that and, you know, and we've had these conversations and we'll get into that. And so how did archaeology and anthropology come into it? Because when you and I first met, I think it's when you were working for New Mexico Wild.
Yeah.
And so how did like all of a sudden you worked for New Mexico Wild and then the monument and all that stuff?
Yeah. So, you know, I have three kids now. And so I'm trying to piece together my own story, right? So I have something that makes sense to share with my kiddos. And, you know, for me, my family has always had deep rooted ties to this landscape. Right. My grandfather, he was a landscaper. He started his own landscaping business. He beautified our community, right? By taking care of the land that was around him and his family. I went to school. I was learning about ceramics. I was learning about how long our deep history and deep ties to this land that we live around like truly exist. And so now looking back, it was kind of, it all makes sense. But at the time, you know, you're just trying to do something good for your family. But now I cannot be lost in the fact that I have deep rooted ties to this place. I recognize how far that goes. And with all the respect from the bottom of my heart, I want to make sure that these places are able to tell and capture all of our story, our full American frontera, borderland story. Yeah,
that's awesome. And so with your first campaign, was your first campaign my first campaign, is the monument of like really protecting public lands?
Totally, absolutely. I jumped in there at New Mexico Wild. We were just wrapping up the Oregon, the Rio Grande del Norte National Monument, which was designated in 2013. And then that's when the focus aimed down here, down south. And that's when, man, I remember being in the trenches with you and a whole bunch of good people, being authentic and sharing what it meant. Or what this place meant for our community. Yeah.
And so what did you learn? I mean, I think about the things that I'm still using today because of a mutual friend that we have who's now branching out on his own, but who was like absolutely incredible in guiding us. What are some of the things that stuck out to you that you still wind up using that we used in the campaign to get OMDP designated?
And so I had the privilege and great honor to be part of the Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks National Monument campaign. I then was poached by an awesome organization, the Conservation Lands Foundation, to go work on a number of other national monuments across the country. And I can tell you there's two common themes that I've seen that just like, if we don't have these two, we'll get nothing done. That's authenticity. I've seen authenticity protect mountain, maybe not move them, but protect millions of acres worth of precious landscape. And then I've seen relationships. I know full down to my core that relationships are going to make sure that this country, that this nation remains on the appropriate trajectory, that we can fully respect and tell and recognize and acknowledge all of our learned experiences and histories that make us who we are, make us, you know, 100% American. So those are the two things. Yes, there's legislation, there's ledge councils, there's smart people, but hey, we can figure that stuff out if you have authenticity and a true relationship kind of as a core while you're doing anything. Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, and I'm so glad that you're part of this because, you know, I get to talk about the economic impact of our public lands and how our local businesses have become invested in those public lands and how they can benefit from those public lands. Yeah. And so, you know, but what I found is that, you know, rallying around the public lands, it really brings together communities. You know, when we talk about like sharing their authentic stories, sharing how important public lands are to different communities and also just like groups that normally wouldn't collaborate together. I mean, you know, with OMDP, I mean, we had sportsmen, we had environmentalists, we had conservationists, we had businesses, we had just a whole gamut of folks who are all like, yes, this is going to be something that's going to be beneficial to our community. And, you know, in your work with Conservation Lands Foundation, did you find that that was also the case, that you have these groups come together that we normally would not think of that would be in the same room right off the bat?
I am so proud to be New Mexican. I'm extra proud to be Southern New Mexican because at the conservation community at the 30,000 foot level, people looked at Las Cruces, man. They looked at the Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks as a model of the way conservation should be done, as the way that you bring broad and diverse, I hate stakeholders. I don't like users, man. Like people who own this land, owners. You bring broad and diverse owners of this of these lands together to build a solution that ultimately works for everyone and works most for our future generations, right? Because they'll be able to continue to hike for cheap when they have kids really young, you know, or a world pandemic hit. That's okay because we have spaces to go take care of ourselves, to take care of our own, and to kind of re-energize. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, you and I both were kind of doing the same. We were doing our work and then in, 2017, the previous administration issued an executive order. It was 2017, 2018, sometime around there. And so what happened is that instead of people enjoying their public lands, they were fighting to protect them. And it was a total shift and it was a deliberate strategy to do that. What did you find that your work, because you were still with CLF at the time, like how that switched for you? When the executive order came down, because Bears Ears was immediately affected, which was the most, it was the last national monument that Obama designated in his presidency. And it was just horrible. It was absolutely horrible. All the work that went into that, because I think you went up to Bears Ears, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I helped organize the bear. Had opportunity to meet a bunch of amazing, authentic folks from there on the ground who were trying to just tell their story.
Right. And protect their ancestral land.
Yeah.
And so how did you see your work shift with CLF when the executive order came down and then it was about protecting them and fighting for them instead of getting them designated?
Not as fun. How about that for starters? Yeah. Right. Taking step backwards is not always the most feel good. But, you know, I can tell you, I did do a lot of learning during that time of just and was provided with many tools, not only from my previous employer, but just from being in this game long enough that I was able to call out that tokenism was a real thing. Right. And that's when me and a good group of my friends and founding board members decided to establish the Nuestra Tierra Conservation Project, a people of color idea, a people of color led, a people of color boarded, staffed, and like really looking to just create that or help bridge that gap of representation. And so that's what the establishment of the Nuestra Tierra Conservation Project stands for, is just a way to put those most overlooked communities kind of back at the driver's seat. And so our mission is not only to get overlooked communities out on the land, but to get them to be part of the political process, to get them in the door. How fun was it for us to be in Washington, D.C., right? To be able to giving those thanks and providing some spanks when they deserved it. And so that's all we're trying to do, is help create access to at every level of the public land management process.
Well, you know, it's so nice to know that, I mean, it was really the previous administration that, you know, as horrible as it was, that it really prompted such an incredible, incredible organization. We're going to talk about that. We're going to take a short break. We're going to be right back with Angel Pena, who is the executive director of the Nuestra Tierra Conservation Project. This podcast is brought to you by Sinuate Media, guiding businesses through marketing technology challenges and opportunities to connect with current and new customers, offering web design, hosting, social media, public relations, and more. Sinuate Media, organic marketing at its best. More at sinuatemedia.com. We are back with Angel Pena, the executive director of the Nuestra Tierra Conservation Project. So, Angel, before we took our break, you talked about really that it was just the horribleness that came out of the previous administration and shutting down voices, and especially voices of communities of color and Latinx and Hispanic communities, in the narrative that is our public lands. And so tell me, I'm really curious, because I know several of you who have part of this, and I'm curious about like what the conversation was in the room when it was like, this is what we need to do.
Yeah, I remember exactly what the conversation was. It happened at Spotted Dog Brewery on the back of a napkin with a couple of good friends just trying to like, trying to make the week okay and say, no, this is not okay. You know, what can we do to change the narrative, to do what we can? You know, many on our board have made commitments in many capacities and multiple capacities with our communities of Southern New Mexico to do what they can to make sure that those most overlooked have an opportunity to kind of strike back. And that's when that plan was developed on the back of the napkin to ensure that no longer are we just okay with overlooked communities being tokenized so other larger organizations can take their steps forward, but rather that our communities can lead the way we want to take the next step in the right direction.
And, you know, Angel, it's after one of our, you know, we did the Monuments to Main Street event, and I remember after we did the mariachis in Las Montañas up in Dripping Springs at the amphitheater, there was a couple that was out there and they were watching the sunset, because it's beautiful to watch the sunset up there.
Yeah.
And he had this beautiful yellow old Ford truck, you know, with like the rounded, you know, wheel wells and all that stuff. And we were leaning on the back of the truck, and he was an older Hispanic man, he and his wife. And he was like, you know, I remember coming out here in the 70s, you know, and climbing over the fence of a private property so I could get, you know, to this different part. I don't know if that's Achenbach Canyon or not, but it's,
yeah.
And, but he was like, you know, I, as a kid, I was up here, and this was a, you know, Hispanic man. And he was just, and, you know, and it was something that was, it was not unknown. It wasn't foreign to me, but it was like, you know, yes, so many communities of color have used these lands prior. And when I had mentioned earlier about me going camping and part of my upbringing and it not being part of your upbringing, you know, it was something that I know the National Park Service has been criticized for a long time, is that there's no incorporation of communities of color. And I sat on a panel that talked about that. And suggested that we use what we've done in Southern New Mexico as a way of engaging communities of color and demonstrating how invested those communities have been and how important they've been in the protection of those lands. And so when Nuestra Tierra started, it was like, yes. I mean, I'm not surprised because I know all of you, but also because where else? I mean, it's really, this is like kind of the epicenter, I feel, of where we see that. So prevalently.
No, man. Hey, you're preaching to the choir over here, and right. I've never heard it like just called out in that way, though. But the Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks was the first one like it, you know, where it had some serious, authentic community involvement. New Mexico, just as a state, even during our last census, not just the one that was completed, we were, I think, 37% or 38% Latino Hispano, where the next most majority Latino Hispano was California, and I think they were at like 32. So New Mexico, our kind of little portion of the world, has been the tip of the spear on a number of things. And I feel like this new political landscape, this new day and age, might allow us to really own that, you know, right. And develop and just lead by example. And I'm so privileged to be working with so many amazing folks down here, like the Green Chamber, like NM Wild, like Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks, like Cafe, to just kind of do the good work, for sure. So I hadn't heard it, but you got me all fired up over here, Carrie.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, you know, and the thing is that as a white person, as an ally, you know, I mean, I feel it's like, you know, we have to support our communities of color because we've been at the forefront for so long. You know, I mean, camping, it's something that we had, camping equipment, and we'll talk about that with the Outdoor Equity Fund. That wasn't something that was really, that was available. I mean, it's expensive. And then when you start looking at communities of color, the socioeconomic situations that many communities of color are in, that, you know, there are so many things that New Mexico is doing to address these issues and to recognize and hear the concerns. And that's what I'm really grateful for with that. And so, you know, one of the things that you've worked on, and Nuestra Tierra has several issues, environmental issues, outdoor issues that are important. But I was so happy to see, you know, you representing Nuestra Tierra when in the New Mexico Senate, we were talking about the Gila River Diversion Project. Woo-hoo. And where that money needed to go.
Hey, what? That's a little bit of a win, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. you know, it was so nice to be, you know, full disclosure, I'm a senator in the Mexico Senate and serving on the Conservation Committee. And I'm sitting there as a committee member seeing my friends talk about how important it is. Oh, so good to see. Oh, nice. And so can you explain kind of the history of the Latinx and Hispanic community in the Gila River and why that was so important to fight for? I mean, there's a number of things. It was really putting money to diverting the Gila River, which would have been horrible for the habitat, the ecosystem, just the cultural history of it. And we were throwing away money to this for years, for I think 15 years, right?
For too long.
Yeah.
Yeah. And millions of dollars just gone into the drain. Yes.
And so what's the cultural history of the Latinx and Hispanic communities in the Gila River? Because I think, you know, back to the early 1800s in the wake of a mining boom, we have a lot of mining up in the Gila River, in the Gila region.
Yeah, no, and, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And so talk, if you'll talk about that, just in terms of just the presence of Latinx and Hispanic communities in that region, and then why the Gila Diversion Project and fighting against it was so important.
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, roots, you know, date back to the 1800s, but actually even further. There's this real mestizo culture that happens up and down the borderland. You know, it's documented that the Spanish came through our neck of the woods here in Las Cruces in 1548, absolutely engaging with the Puebloans out west of here, up into the Gila forest and wilderness, now wilderness. But the communities of Hurley, Bayard, and Santa Clara have been primarily Latino and Hispano communities, really, you're right, for hundreds of years, working to just support the economy and help define what the American West was going to look like. I need to call out that the Latino, Hispano, Mexican heritage is absolutely important here, but you know, we would be remiss if we did not call out that these lands were initially stolen and that we live on broken treaties of the Ornada Mogollon cultural traditions. So before the communities of Hurley, Bayard, and Santa Clara, we had the homelands of the Apache, the Chiricahua, Mescalero, and Fort Sill, who continue to call that place home, who look at that place as a real part of who they are in history. And so, yes, we, Nuestra Tierra, were very excited to see the state legislature quit talking about wasting money and only helping support a privileged few, and really prioritize the communities that have relied on this river for generations. And so we were very excited to see the Gila diversion once and for all be just like, let's close the door on that and let's work on something more meaningful, right? Let's spend our time and money and energy in uplifting a community and a people rather than spending all that time, money, and energy of like trying to segregate or redefine what the cultures and communities out there should and are like.
Yeah, and I don't get why that was even a project in the first place. I think it was
hey,
dumb.
You and me both, homie.
Yeah, it was dumb. What happened? Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, and speaking of the legislature prior, you know, our friend and colleague, Representative Angelica Rubio, was really instrumental in the creation of the Outdoor Equity Fund. And oh my gosh, what an amazing accomplishment, because New Mexico is the only state in the country that has that. And Nuestra Tierra Conservation Project really led the charge for that Outdoor Equity Fund. And that happened in 2019. The governor put it into effect in July of 2019. And so, yeah, why was that fund created, first of all? And then let's talk about how it needs to be funded more. It needs to get more money. But you know, what did you see it addressing, first of all, and how have you seen it being implemented? Because it's still really brand new.
Yes, it is. And, you know, here at Nuestra Tierra, we came together because we just defined and called out that our communities, those most overlooked in southern New Mexico, in New Mexico, in the borderland, need the resources, opportunity, and access to get outside. That's when we worked really hard, and or once we started to kind of put that into practice, we realized that that is a huge goal and that we needed all the help we could get. That's when we started looking towards policies that could really help us take what we were doing and elevate the scale at which we were trying to accomplish our goal. That's when we looked to establish the New Mexico Outdoor Equity Fund, the first of its kind, a state-funded program that gets it can help get kids into warm socks, into clothing. It can help fill the gas tank to get these kiddos out to their public lands, to their open spaces. And so, yes, we were able to take a significant step forward in 2019. I thank our representatives. I thank our state legislature for allowing us the opportunity to take that step. But like you just referred to, a vision without resources is little more than a hallucination. And we need more resources in that bad boy. I can say that here in just this year, we were able to, I think, by almost four times, put more funds into the bucket, if you will. So now we will be able to get tens of thousands of New Mexico first-timer kiddos out on the ground enjoying and learning about their culture and tradition. And so we still have a long way to go. We're not at all, you know, it's not at all a checkbox, but it is a step in the right direction.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of the things that as a new senator, we were given what's called junior money. And so, you know, I had, I think, almost 100,000 of my junior money go to the Outdoor Equity Fund because, you know, it's, I think of the privilege that I had as a kid being able to have camping equipment and a sleeping bag and a camp stove and a light, and know that those are so many barriers for a lot of people of like, it's an investment. And, you know, when we have the opportunity to buy hiking boots, something just that simple, what is like for many folks is just, you know, oh, I need to get hiking boots today. But for others, it's like, you know, I can't go hiking in these shoes. I'm going to break my ankles, you know.
Miss Carrie, we're good friends. So I'm just going to, you know, I'm a little embarrassed about it, but it's just the reality of how it rolled out for me. So when I got into hiking for the first time, and I always just hiked in my tennis shoes, but I was going to get this awesome job with this new organization. And so I needed to look the part, quote unquote. I went to Walmart and I had me some steel toe boots. And while everyone else was walking around in these, like, I don't know,
bougie hiking boots.
Yeah. I had these steel toe boots, and I remember feeling embarrassed, but I had already spent the money on them. They were like $20, but I had to use them. So it's real, man. It's real the way these barriers roll out on kids, just because, for no good reason.
Right.
Honestly.
Right. You know, and that's why I'm really grateful that we have the Outdoor Equity Fund, and that we also have groups like yours, you know, and the Friends of the Oregon Mountains, and just like, you know, people like you and like and Gabe and Patrick and you know, all sorts of folks who are all connected in these groups and who are working on getting communities of color, and especially young people, outside. And it's so important. You know, one of the things that I was really surprised to read on the Nuestra Tierra site is that there's now the Outdoor Future, the initiative. It's the Fund for the Underserved Tribal, Urban, and Rural Equity Initiative. And that is a project that is developed by the office of our good friend, U.S. Senator Martin Heinrich. Yep. And it's to create this foundation. And so tell me about that, because how exciting. It's really, it seems to me like it's kind of expanding on the whole, first of all, the purpose of Nuestra Tierra, and then the economic element of the Outdoor Equity Fund. It seems like it's kind of combining both of those in the best of every way, and then like moving it to other communities that have been underserved when it comes down to our public lands.
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up, Ms. Carey. The Outdoor Future Initiative is and has been built by lived experiences of a group of broad and diverse organizations and individuals from across the country. We're working with folks like we're working with folks from the Native American College Fund, with Native Women Wilderness, from Rising Routes, from Outdoor Afro, from the Greening Youth Foundation, to the Continental Divide Trail Coalition, to really take this idea of what an outdoor equity fund can look like and take it to the next level. New Mexico so proudly took the first step out of the 50 states in that direction. We were followed by Colorado and California. California, I think they've got an outdoor equity fund with some like $5 million in it. So like,
of course, we need to step up.
Yeah, no one likes overachievers though. Come on, slow down, California. Give us a chance to catch up, you know? No, I'm just kidding. I love that this is really starting to take hold in many other states, and the vision and ultimate success for the National Outdoor Future Act or Future Initiative is to simply empower local states' initiatives to get kids out, man. The awesome thing about the foundation perspective, or the foundation idea, is that we are not withholden to only fund tribally recognized organizations or tribes, for example. Through the foundation, we're able to raise private funds to ensure that we're able to recognize, empower, and elevate all sorts of authentic communities who are on the ground, kind of really living in this new world.
Right, because you don't have to have a 501c3 charter to enjoy the outdoors if you're a community of color or indigenous folks or black folks. I mean, it's just ridiculous to have that as like a stipulation. So I'm so glad that those barriers aren't there.
Well, we're trying, right? We're taking every swing we can, and that we hope that the vision will see fruition for sure.
Well, it's so exciting. And I'll be giving your website at the end of the podcast. You know, just a couple more questions, Angel, before we finish. You know, how did COVID affect what Nuestra Tierra was able to do? And how do you see your activities post-COVID?
Yeah, absolutely. So as an extrovert, I'll tell you what, Carey, I'm in this business because I like to be out with community. I like to be cultivating and creating community and having a good time, and making amazing memories with my friends and family. So COVID was a bummer. That really put a hold on like the plans. But that's where we were really able to strategically invest our time, resources, and capacity to create these tools, to create these policies that help us take the next level, take that next step in the right direction, even though we were all here at home, kind of homeschooling and eating too much. And COVID-19, straight up for me, has been like 18. I was on the phone the other day, Ms. Carey, and I hung up on someone, and I think it was my cheek. And I was like, oh,
you got chubby cheeks.
I was like, that's COVID, man. So COVID, professional and personal level, COVID hit me in a real way, but we're chomping at the bit to get back outside, to get back out of just protecting and telling our full American story, especially that the one that makes us so proud to be fronteriza, to be from the borderland, you know, right. Whatever color you are, man, we're all community down here.
Right, sure. Right. Well, I mean, I grew up in El Paso too. You know, it's something that was always part of my growing up was gordita parties and quinceañeras and
Fiestadas, homie. Gosh, it's brutal right now.
Right. Right. Well, you know, when we talk about just bringing, you know, all of the communities together, it just kind of leads me to my last comment or question is, how stoked are we that Deb Haaland is the Secretary of Interior?
Beep, 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 beep. Yeah. Stoked. That was kind of amazing, huh? Like a good friend. Just, yeah, it's good stuff.
How do you see this impacting the Department of Interior? Because there's certainly folks in oil and gas who are very concerned about her leading the Department of Interior. I think she's going to be very fair, but she's also going to bring up those voices that have been shot down over and over again when it comes down to recognizing their impact in our public lands.
No, you know, and I think you and I, Carrie, we had the amazing opportunity to work with Secretary Sally Jewell back in the good old days, right? And then we also had maybe not the privilege nor opportunity, but to roll and swing against the Zinke days and Bernhardt. And this new Secretary of the Interior really, for me, means representation, authenticity, and a way of doing business, a new way of doing business, one that prioritizes people, our culture, traditions, and a public land system that tells the full American story, the one that makes us so proud, the one that is above and beyond talking points or charismatic fauna, but one that really looks to
truly represent.
Just truly represent and capture and help share and tell our story. Mm-hmm. Even with all of its nuances, right? That's important. That's important stuff.
You know, one of the things that gave me chills when it was around the time of her hearing was a photo of Deb, which is really nice to be able to say, where it was kind of like the sepia tones that you used to see a lot of Native people take in, you know, the famous picture of Geronimo. And then there was the picture of Deb. And oh my gosh, that gave me chills. Absolutely gave me chills. So I'm excited to see what she's going to do. And I think it's going to be amazing. It's going to be fun to go to DC again. I was talking with our colleague, Patrick Nolan, that, you know, we'll be able to connect with our new legislators. I have all sorts of ideas for fly-ins once we can do that.
With friends, not enemies. It's right. It's more fun to talk with a friend than like try to talk to someone who maybe...
Right. Just come up with great ideas, you know,
like let's just think of good ideas together for sure. Yeah.
Right. Well, I was in Senator Heinrich's office when we started talking about the LWCF road trip and that came up there.
We got a date on that. Let's do it.
Yeah. Right. I know. Well, Angel, it has been so fun to talk with you. And thank you so much for being on Homegrown Economies. I mean, we'll be doing this again because it's just you're doing some incredible work. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, Miss Carrie, thank you for this opportunity. I can't wait for a backyard discada barbecue. Keep me tuned in.
All about the discada, man. All about it.
Thank you.
With all the chorizo and jamon.
Stop it. Stop it.
Sorry. I know. Now we're going to get people interested in it. Angel Pena is the executive director of the Nuestra Tierra Conservation Project. More information about their programs, the different things that they're doing can be found at Nuestra-Tierra, that's TIERRA.org. Thank you for joining us on Homegrown Economies. We will come to you every 2 weeks with conversations with business owners, outdoor groups, leaders in the outdoor rec field, and more. More information about our schedule and the Green Chamber of Commerce can be found at locallascruces.com/homegrown. The music in this program is provided by local musician Randy Granger, a native flute player, guitarist, and one of the most talented on the hung drum, which is what you are hearing now. You can find out more about Randy at randygranger.com. That's it for this edition of Homegrown Economies. I'm Carrie Hamblin, the CEO and president of the Las Cruces Green Chamber. And as we like to say at the Green Chamber, think local first and go do what your mama always told you to do. Go play outside.